came up to me and said, David, would you like to do a sermon? And I said, well, sure. So the elders had kind of had a different set of lessons set out for, you know, each month throughout this year. And there were about two slots left, this month and some other month further down the line. But I said, okay, let's do July. And so then there was a set of verses kind of associated with each month. And I didn't even know what they were. You know, I just said, okay, sure, let's go with this. And so it was 1 Corinthians chapter 8. So then I got home and I read 1 Corinthians chapter 8. And I thought, this is going to be hard to make a sermon about. It just didn't seem relevant to anything that I could come of. You know, it was things that all happened back then. It was sacrificing animals. And I thought, that is hard to talk about today. You know, we don't really go sacrificing animals today or see people that do that. At least, you know, I haven't ever. But then the more I got to reading it, the more I realized there's a lot of relevant lessons in this chapter right here. So I'd like to go ahead and read the 1 Corinthians chapter 8. It's a short chapter. I'll go ahead and read again from the beginning. It says, now concerning things sacrificed to idols, we know that we all have knowledge. Knowledge makes arrogant, but love edifies. If anyone supposes that he knows anything, he is not yet known as he ought to know. But if anyone loves God, he is known by him. Therefore, concerning the eating of things sacrificed to idols, we know that there is no such thing as an idol in the world, and that there is no God but one. For even if there are so-called gods, whether in heaven or on earth, as indeed there are many gods and many lords, yet for us there is but one God, the Father, from whom are all things, and we exist for him, and one Lord, Jesus Christ, by whom are all things, and we exist through him. However, not all men have this knowledge, but some, being accustomed to the idol until now, eat food as if it were sacrificed to an idol, and their conscience, being weak, is defiled. But food will not condemn us to God. We are neither the worse if we do not eat, nor the better if we do eat. But take care that this liberty of yours does not somehow become a stumbling block to the weak. For if someone sees you, who have knowledge, dining in an idol's temple, will not his conscience, if he is weak, be strengthened to eat things sacrificed to idols? For through your knowledge, he who is weak is ruined, the brother for whose sake Christ died. And so, by sinning against the brethren and wounding their conscience when it is weak, you sin against Christ. Therefore, if food causes my brother to stumble, I will never eat meat again, so that I will not cause my brother to stumble. So after I read this a couple of times, I started to see a lot more lessons coming through than just talking about sacrificing animals to idols. Now, just to be clear, you know, back in Paul's day, during this time, that was the custom for the heathens, I guess. And so then when they sacrificed the animals, well, what do you do with the animal after you're done? So they actually gave a third to the priest. And then some of the other that was left over could be sold just in the market, like Fred Meyer. You could go and buy this, and it was actually a little cheaper than maybe, you know, whatever the other meat you could buy for the day. So people would go buy the meat and eat it just like anything else. But then, you know, throughout these verses here, it's like, if you knew that it was sacrificed for an idol, the people then were concerned. Am I sinning if I eat this meat? Does this somehow make me be an idol worshiper too by eating meat that was sacrificed to the idol? I mean, they had all these questions. You know, they were confused. And so, like in verse 8, Paul says, but food will not commend us to God. We are neither the worse if we do not eat, nor the better if we do. So it really hadn't anything to do with the food. But yet Paul was teaching them that it's not so much the meat, It's the person's conscience and how you're treating your brother in Christ. And then also in verse 13, Paul also says, if food causes my brother to stumble, I will never eat meat again, so that I will not cause my brother to stumble. So I've got this question here, are we our brother's keeper? And I thought that was so funny how it got brought up this morning, you know, that question. And, you know, the short answer to this question is yes, we are definitely our brother's keeper. Anytime that someone is having a hard time or falling away, it's our job to go in and bring that brother back. We are our brother's keeper. And then Paul even goes to the extent to say, if food causes my brother to stumble, I'll never eat meat again. So he's willing to sacrifice some of the things that is actually okay for him to do. But if it's causing his brother a hard time, then all of a sudden it becomes not okay to do. So today, just think of our knowledge that we have, not necessarily about whether it's okay to eat meat or not, but just our knowledge in general of what it takes to be saved, what it takes to go to heaven. So we actually have a certain amount of knowledge. You know, I mean, we have maybe more than just the average person that's out there. Even though everyone has access to it, we've learned it. So then I ask, what are we doing with that knowledge? Do we do nothing and just think that somebody else can help the people, or, you know, someone else can bring our brother in that's astray? Do we just let them figure it out on their own, the person who's struggling? You know, well, what do we do with our knowledge? And then I think it's also possible that we might approach people without love. And sometimes I think this happens when we react instead of having a planned kind of calm and collected approach. Things come up, and all of a sudden, instead of us being able to just perhaps react the way we want to, we overreact to something. And with that, I'll share with y'all a story from my childhood, and since none of my brothers or sisters are here, it's the way I remember it, the way this story goes. But I just remember many a times that my mom would be talking about my brother and say, that kid could argue with a fence post. And we all knew what it meant, even though I was a little bit too young to really quite grasp it. He could argue with a fence post, and he would be right. No matter what happened, no matter what, if we were talking about why the sky is blue or why cows do what cows do or the way engines work, he knew it. And you were wrong if you said anything else other than what he had to say. He had the standard and everything else. If it didn't match what he said, not true at all. And that's when I learned what it meant he could argue with the fence post, because he would let you know that it was that you were not right. And sometimes he would get so excited with his story, he would even notice that you'd lost interest, or that maybe you got your feelings hurt, or maybe you just fed it with him, and maybe you even walked off. He didn't even know. You know, he would just get so into his story. And sometimes I think that's the way we can be today. You know, we may react to a question, because sometimes people can ask questions that are innocent, but yet it might make us reflect on something inside that made us uncomfortable. You know, maybe we don't feel comfortable answering that, and then all of a sudden we come across not in a loving attitude, but in a way that is really hurtful to our brother. So just keep in mind, are we our brother's keeper? Yes, we are our brother's keeper. So I also thought it was interesting, I was reading different versions of the Bible. And in verse 1, the New American Standard Version says, knowledge makes arrogant, but love edifies. And in the King James Version, it says, knowledge puffeth up, but charity edifieth. And I just wondered if we ever puff up. Do we ever get puffed up about something? Do you ever look down on others that don't know as much as you do? You may not intentionally do it, but I think we all probably have at one time or another. Paul tells you to recognize that love edifies. And the word edify means to build up. The Christian life isn't about how much you know or how strong you are, but how much you love. And are we our brother's keeper? How much you love. So Paul's telling us to not get puffed up with our own knowledge, but to teach others with love. And we may not even realize that we're not being loving when we approach others, but we could be impatient and just come across as arrogant or self-righteous. So we are a brother's keeper, and to approach it with love. So I'd like to turn to 1 Corinthians 13, 1 through 7. If I speak with the tongues of men and of angels, but do not have love, I have become a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and know all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have all faith so as to remove mountains, but do not have love, I am nothing. And if I give all my possessions to feed the poor, and if I surrender my body to be burned, but do not have love, it profits me nothing. Love is patient, love is kind, and is not jealous. Love does not brag and is not arrogant, does not act unbecomingly. It does not seek its own, is not provoked, does not take into account a wrong suffered, does not rejoice in unrighteousness, but rejoices with the truth. Bears all things, believes all things, hopes all things, endures all things. And just remember, we are our brother's keeper. So then, do we approach others with love? I wanted to kind of look at the pattern that Paul talked about. Are you the kind of person that's willing to sacrifice for the sake of your brother? And now let's just back up a few pages to 1 Corinthians 10 and start with verse 25. 1 Corinthians 10:25. He says, "Eat anything that is sold in the meat market without asking questions for conscience sake. For the earth is the Lord's and all it contains. If one of the unbelievers invites you and you want to go, eat anything that is set before you without asking questions for conscience sake. But if anyone says to you, 'This is meat sacrificed to idols,' do not eat it, for the sake of the one who informed you and for conscience sake. I mean not your own conscience, but the other man's. For why is my freedom judged by another's conscience? If I partake with thankfulness, why am I slandered concerning that for which I give thanks? Whether then you eat or drink or whatever you do, do all to glorify to the glory of God. Give no offense either to Jews or to Greeks or to the church of God, just as I also please all men in all things, not seeking my own profit, but the profit of the many, so that they may be saved." So I think Paul's point is, it's not splitting the fine hair of whether it's actually okay to eat the meat or not. It's not really the point. But the point is that if you love your brother, you'll put your own wants aside for his benefit. And I think that's what Paul is getting at. Paul said that it's neither right nor wrong to eat the meat. We should be willing to forgo things like this for the sake of our brother. Over time and with love, we can continue to teach and edify our brother. And then we may be able to remove that stumbling block. So where they aren't sure about something, maybe with time and love, we can teach them so that that's no longer a stumbling block. But while it is, just abstain from doing that for the sake of your brother. Back in chapter 8, in verse 1, where it says, knowledge makes arrogant, but love edifies. And then later in 13, at the bottom of the chapter, where it says, if food causes my brother to stumble, I will never eat meat again, so that I will not cause my brother to stumble. Paul is willing to put that aside. And I feel like that is a Christ-like attitude, to forgo your own freedoms for the sake of your brother. Paul is basically saying, don't look at your freedom and what you are having to sacrifice, but look at their need. And Christ's interest in the weaker brother is greater than his interest in you being able to do your freedoms. We are our brother's keeper. Now, obviously, I think if a brother objects to something that is a duty that we owe God, then we have to perform it regardless of the objections from our brother. We can't just rewrite the Bible the way we want, but again, explain to them with truth and love and that we are our brother's keeper. And so just some things to personally reflect upon. I was just kind of thinking of questions of when have I used my knowledge to build up my fellow Christians? And what was their response? And how have I sought to guard myself from pride and exemplify humility? How can I have the best of both worlds, knowledge and love? Ephesians 4:15 says to speak the truth in love. And then 1 Corinthians 13, 1-7 that we just read really talked about how to show love. And then in 8:11, I was thinking about what am I struggling with that could ruin a brother? And that was his quote exactly. He says, you know, be careful to not ruin a brother by something that you do. How can I learn to be more sensitive to my fellow Christians? And how could we ruin a brother through our knowledge? It could be by being puffed up with arrogance and not approaching our brother with love. So, this is the end of the lesson. So, as we conclude tonight, I feel like everyone here, I definitely know you. I feel like if there's people here tonight that haven't been baptized, that wanted to be, then by all means, this is a great time to do it. And I was really humbled by the two men that came forward this morning. I was really rejoicing for their behalf. And if there was anyone here who just needed prayers or to make their life right with God, this would be a great time as we stand and sing.